On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to preview the NBA Christmas Day slate of games featuring Cavs vs. Knicks, Spurs vs. Thunder, Mavs vs. Warriors, Rockets vs. Lakers, and of course, Wolves vs. the Nuggets. Plus, should the NBA get rid of the draft to de-incentivize tanking? All of this coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to all those who are watching The Big Number this week, especially you, Dan. That's our man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's happening, man?
Tom, I feel phenomenal right now because talking to you means that I finished the five most interesting players of Christmas Day column that I had to write for Yahoo Sports that I don't know if it'll be up by the time this episode comes out, but if not, you'll be able to read it on Christmas Eve leading into Christmas Day. And you have to read it so many times because it needs to get some value back. But it's done now. It's filed. It's my editor's problem. And so now all I got to do is sit here and talk to you. What a wonderful time for us to be together. So let's dispense with the pleasantries. I'm sick of these pleasantries. Tom Haberstroh, what is the big number for this holiday week?
This week's big number is 19 years and 4 days. It's kind of a number, right? That's 19 years and 4 days. That's Cooper Flagg's age on Christmas Day. He's going to be playing, starting for the Dallas Mavericks in a big matchup against the Golden State Warriors. And he is going to be the second youngest player ever to start on Christmas Day behind a one LeBron James. LeBron James, by the way, still playing. You know, when LeBron James was 18 years old and 360 days old, he was starting on Christmas Day. I'm saying that because LeBron beat him by like 9 days as to the youngest ever to start on Christmas Day. LeBron was 18 when he dropped 34 points on Christmas Day, and he's still playing on Christmas Day, much to his chagrin, Dan. I kind of feel like it's a get to play on Christmas Day, not play, have to play on Christmas Day for LeBron James, right? Just that you get to write that column for Yahoo Sports. You don't have to write that column for Yahoo Sports. It just feels like, you know, this is the start of a long, amazing career for Cooper Flagg, 19 years old, 4 days, and he's doing great numbers up until this point. And he had a little bit of a slow start, which we'll get into, but look at this list. Kevin Durant, I get it. Kevin Knox and James Wiseman. And they did pretty well on Christmas Day. Look at this. 21 points from Kevin Knox. Who knew? James Wiseman, you know, with the Golden State Warriors, who Cooper Flagg is facing on Christmas Day. So I just think, you know, after a kind of a tough start to his, an up and down start to his career, Cooper Flagg has been every bit as promising and as real time, here and now productive, really good basketball player. One of the best clutch players in the league, and he's right now slated to start on Christmas Day, which is a huge honor bestowed on very few 18-year-old, 19-year-old players in the NBA. So we got five games, Dan. We got Cleveland, New York. We've got San Antonio, OKC, Dallas, Golden State, Houston, Los Angeles Lakers. The Minnesota caps it off against Denver. It's going to be a great slate. But today, we're going to open things up talking about Cooper Flagg, the former number one overall pick, who is going to make a big entrance. A lot of people are tuning in for the first time on the NBA this season, as we do every Christmas. And they're going to see Cooper Flagg, who has been awesome as of late. Dan, what are you most excited about to see Cooper Flagg on Christmas?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to get an opportunity for a coming out party for a player who has just sort of like the line has kind of steadily gone up over the course of the season. You know, you mentioned the slow start for him where Jason Kidd was sort of experimenting at the beginning of the season, didn't have a point guard that he super trusted and loved on the roster. So he said, I'm just going to do what we did with Giannis in Milwaukee, and I'm going to give you the ball. I'm going to give Cooper Flagg the ball, give him the sort of put him in positions to be uncomfortable, to see how I facilitate, how I attack a defense when a defense is geared toward me. And all this is going to pay dividends down the line. It did result immediately in like the worst offense in the NBA. But the idea is that this will force him to see it from a different perspective. It'll sort of widen his vistas. After like five games of that, Jason Kidd said, all right, let's put a point guard on the floor. And they started, I think it was at first it was D'Angelo Russell in the lineup. And then so like since that time, since it was that sort of quick adjustment and movement into getting away from point flag, he's averaged 20.3 points, 6.4 rebounds, 3.9 assists, and about 2.5 stocks, steals and blocks per game, and shot 50% from the floor. So like right away, again, 18 years old, 26, three, almost 4 assists and 2.5 stocks, like while making half of his shots. And a lot of his shots are really tough, like self-created, ISOing from the wing, I'm bodying up defenders, I'm finding ways to sort of herky-jerk my way into the paint and just get into these sort of tough mid-range shots because his three-point shot isn't there quite yet. And so there's like he's having to just generate a lot of this on his own. Since Ryan Nemhart, another rookie there, undrafted pick, got into the starting lineup and Kidd kind of tossed him the keys, Flag's averaging 23.3 points per game and shooting 57% inside the arc over the last, I think it's 11 games now. So like the more he is given the opportunity to finish as opposed to create, and the more he's been put around or players around him who will look for him, and then also defenses have to honor their jump shots in the perimeter, like it's opening up for him in a way where you're like, there's no reason why this guy should be this good this fast. And so like he's going to have to deal with on Christmas Day. I'm not sure exactly how the matchups will work out. This will be the first meeting of the season between the Warriors and the Mavericks. So don't have like previous film to look at. But hey, Kidd, welcome to the big show. Here's like Draymond Green and Jimmy Butler to deal with defensively, right? Like, so like it's going to be a tall task for him. If I had to bet, it's going to be close late because the Dallas Mavericks are like unable to play non-crunch time games. I think 23 of their 29 games this season have been within 5 points in the final 5 minutes. And crazy. When they get into those settings, they throw the ball to Cooper Flagg. And like that's the kind of the vestige of the experiment for Jason Kidd. It's when you get into crunch time, hey, here you go. Here's the ball. Make a decision. Attack. Make something happen. And Cooper Flagg is fourth in the NBA in scoring in the clutch. Among all NBA players, not among rookies, not among teenagers, not among whatever, it's SGA, Cade Cunningham, Tyrese Maxey, Cooper Flagg. That's your crunch time scoring list. So like he has been absolutely as advertised. It has been whatever speed bumps there were at the beginning, he has, you know, rumbled past those. And yeah, it certainly feels like we are in line for something more like LeBron and Kevin Durant, then respectfully, Kevin Knox and James Wiseman. And hopefully this will be an opportunity for us to sort of see the next step in that elevation.
Do you think he's going to lie when he tells Al Horford, yeah, I remember your first championship at Florida. Remember that?
It's either that or he'll just be like, the future is now, old man. You know, one or the other. Yeah. I don't know, sure which one he'll say. Which also he could say to every member of the Golden State Warriors. Like how many players, I mean, that, if I was a real, you know, good co-host here, I would have done the pre-pro on like how many people are old, you know, how many people was Cooper Flagg not alive for their first big moment in the NBA on the Warriors? I bet it would be a bunch of them. Or at least were, at least, you know, was he a cognizant child? Like at what point did he have object permanence when these guys were in the league? Like what was going on there? This is
like
the,
he was negative three. I think negative 3 years old when LeBron made his debut, right? Like, I think that would be the math. Because he was born right, December 21st, 2006.
Yeah.
He was not alive when Al Horford and Joakim Noah won the first title at Florida. And actually, I looked this up, Dad. Steph Curry played on Cooper Flagg's birthday. Like the day he was born, Steph Curry was playing Ohio and scored like 21 points against Ohio. In
Davidson. Oh my gosh. That's
so like he was already averaging 20 points a game as a freshman at Davidson when he when Cooper Flagg was born. So it just is nuts. It really is. I think this is my we're going to talk about NBA rules that need to be fixed. The NBA is proposing starting talks about fixing the draft and fixing tanking and stuff like that. Fixing might not be the best word in the NBA right now, but
it's not.
Correcting tanking issues.
Sure.
I think the NBA needs to have some way for fans to know how young or old these players are. Like when you're watching a game, like shoe color or a patch or something, a jersey, it's like something so you can know that dude's 18 out here. Like, when you're watching Cooper Flagg, there should be some way, like a marker of some sort, to alert the audience that that guy's 19 years old. He just turned 19. And that guy's 40. Al Horford, that guy's 40. Can you believe it? I don't know if the 40-year-olds really like this, or do you think like the gray in their beard already tells people that, oh, Draymond Green is 35, 36, and Steph is 37? I just feel like there has to be a better way that we can show the audience. I don't know whether it's like a 2K video game little orb around them that show, like, color coded to say how old they are. But it is nuts when you have Cooper Flagg playing as a 19-year-old who wasn't even alive for Al Horford's Final Four runs, that he's playing against Al Horford's team and Steph Curry's team and Draymond. It just seems like there's got to be a cool way to raise that, right? Like, Dan, in your brilliant mind, in your beautiful mind there, is there anything that I have said here that makes you say, Tom is an absolute lunatic for thinking that this is a good idea? Is there any way we can, like, meld your brain into what I'm saying here that makes any sense from a TV viewing experience?
I do think you're a visionary. No arguments here. For me, I mean, the way that I can tell the Cooper Flagg is 19 years old is that goatee. That is a a facial hair choice that, like, every sophomore in college has, you know, made at some point. It was like, oh, just experiment with the mustache. And like, yeah, maybe that's what's going on here. Facial hair experimentation early in the collegiate career is at a premium. I do wonder if your elder statesman, I know many Warriors fans have called him the unction. The older gentlemen on the Golden State Warriors, they might not love the having their age emphasized in that way, where it's like if you had, like, Cooper Flagg, I don't know, like a bright green patch on his shoulder or something like that, it just, like, fades to gray on theirs. They might not love that. It might feel a little bit like how Kevin Durant didn't want you to know he's 7 foot tall, so he's like, yeah, no, list me at 6'9", like that kind of thing. But I do, like, listen, every one of these broadcasters is doing alternate broadcasts, right? You know, there's like friggin' Mickey Mouse dunking on Donald, and, you know, it looks like a video game when you watch it on a streaming service. Why can't there be an alt cast that's just like, as if someone gets the ball, you hear somebody yelling, he's 40, or like, that dude wasn't alive when PlayStation 3 was invented, or something like that. Like, why couldn't listen,
he's younger than the iPhone. Yeah, like that's yeah, the stuff, right? That when you're sitting around on the couch drinking eggnog and listening to Bing Crosby, I kind of feel like you need someone to be like, that guy that just dunked over Draymond Green, he wasn't alive when the iPhone came out. Like, I just
he's
think that
too
that,
young to know who Bing Crosby is. We're having fun here, like, Tom. It's Happy Holidays edition.
Yeah. What's in that mug there, Dan? So Cooper Flagg.
Take it easy, you.
I'm just saying we're having a lot of fun here, and you might have some soda in there. Cooper Flagg, again, really good. But one thing I want to point out is his ability to play bigger than he is. So he's 19, 4 days old on Christmas Day. But he's got this, like, old man game to him where he's doing a lot of post-ups in the block, and he's using footwork. He has this little, like, turnover his left shoulder fadeaway on the block. He might be 19, but when he has a smaller guy, I remember Mac McClung earlier this year tried to guard him in the post, and Cooper Flagg was like, watch this, kid. And turns out Mac McClung's like 8 years older than him, but still, he just bodied him like a big brother, right? And I feel like Cooper Flagg has just got a lot of old man game to him. His three-point shot hasn't been falling this season, shooting 24% from downtown, but I feel like it's going to come along in the same way that for a lot of these guys, I mean, LeBron included, it takes a few years before you can have your body. It's weird to say, but like, teenagers' bodies are still growing and figuring out like how to use their limbs and stuff. And like, oh my, like my goatee, how do I keep that goatee while my shot mechanics, you know, figured out? That, I think, is going to, in a couple years, Cooper Flagg will get that knockdown jumper, and he'll be really scary. But defensively, offensively, Point Flag was a fun experiment, but I'm excited to see what he does against Steph Curry, Draymond, and the Warriors on Christmas Day. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited. The NFL, Dan, I don't know how much you pay attention to the NFL, but there are a lot of injuries over there, and kind of, you know, the Chiefs, the Cowboys, they're out of the playoff picture. So I feel like there's a Wire reference here about taking back the corner, but the NBA, I think it's got a great slate of games here on Christmas Day, and the NFL is trying to take that turf. But I like that Adam Silver and has this slate of games and is like, you know what, we're going to come up on this corner and make sure we take it back. And Cooper Flagg, second youngest player ever to start on Christmas Day. I'm excited, even though he's making me feel really old right now.
Yeah, I realized as I was writing about him for the column, I think I literally have t-shirts older than Cooper Flagg. And so that's not a great thing for my wardrobe. Like, I should probably refresh that a little bit, but it is an indication of how times are changing, and maybe some more of those along the way as we talk about some of the other games on Christmas Day slate.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about those other four games. And let me talk to the audience real quick and remind everybody that there's going to be lots of games there, and we're going to have lots of content at the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel, which you can get our show, The Big Number. You can get the KOC show. You can get the Dunker Spot, all on the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel, which just launched. And you should go subscribe. Anyone who's watching this right now on YouTube, go subscribe. If you're listening to us in your ears as you go for a cousin walk, make sure that you get the subscription, the 5 stars. And yeah, thank you so much for checking that stuff out and watching the show. We'll be back with Dan's four little numbers. We're going to talk about the rest of the slate on Christmas Day. Dan, 19 years and 4 days old. That's Cooper Flagg starting on Christmas Day. I don't even want to ask, what were you doing when you were 19 years old, 4 days? What were we doing?
That's the beginning, a September baby, late September baby. So that's the beginning of my sophomore year of college. The goatee was probably part of it. And then I think the rest of it probably, amen. You know, let's let the past be the past, and let's move forward, Tom, into four little numbers this week, rather than revisit too much of what 19-year-old Dan Devine was doing or not doing.
Well, maybe your jumper, you were shooting 24% of your threes back in when you're 19 too. So maybe there's some.
I mean, yeah, my success rate at shooting my shot wasn't great at that point. We'll say that much. first little number this week is 56.6%. So dramatically better success rate than what we're talking about for me. But 56.6% is what opponents are shooting against Karl Anthony Towns at the rim this season, according to Second Spectrum. That's actually pretty low compared to what we've seen from Karl Anthony Towns. Last year, they shot nearly 70% at the rim against him. So 56.6%, dramatic improvement, and also the second best mark of his career. That's notable because, like, when we think of Karl Towns and the value that he brings this New York Knicks offense as they go and they take on the Cleveland Cavaliers in the matinee game on Christmas Day at Madison Square Garden, the idea is, he's going to be your floor spacer, right? He's going to add you, be an additive on the offensive end of the floor. And that has certainly happened. The Knicks enter Christmas at the number two offense in the NBA behind only the Denver Nuggets. And they made the conference finals last year, largely on the strength of that offense with him and Jalen Brunson and their wing shooters. And I think it's been of interest this year that Karl Towns has really made an impact defensively. Doesn't block a lot of shots, doesn't snag a lot of steals, but Mike Brown has had him moving around a lot on the defensive end. He's not that sit and duck and drop coverage anymore. And when he's able to, you know, move in and be like a weak side rim protector, somebody who's coming over late to contest, he's been doing a really good job holding opponents to 56.6% at the rim. We don't think of him as a particularly good interior defender. It's like the Wolves only got good at defense when Rudy Gobert got there. The Knicks have defended at a top eight level when Towns is the center this season on the floor. 112.3 points per 100 possessions allowed. That's really good. EPM, estimated plus minus, we talk about that a lot on this show. It marks him as a top 25 defender in the league this season in terms of his impact. A lot of that is going to be offensive rebounding. You know, you finish the possession. That's hugely important. You don't give up second chance opportunities. He's just been kind of good. There's actually a great piece on this if people want to go check it out. Knicks Film School, wonderful Substack that covers the Knicks really closely. Ben Ritholtz did a wonderful breakdown on Cat's interior defense this season, how valuable he's been. We've talked about the Knicks as an Eastern favorite. They won the NBA Cup. We've talked about them as potentially a NBA championship contender. And a lot of that's going to be like, can they be good enough on the defensive end? Are you buying that Karl Anthony Towns, 11 years into his career, maybe can be that, you know, maybe he's not going to be an elite defender, but like if he's say is good for the Knicks is Jokic was on defense for the Nuggets a couple years ago. Could the Knicks maybe have that kind of defensive ceiling to get them into that conversation?
For sure. And he's got a great matchup here, I think, against the Cleveland Cavaliers that is out Evan Mobley as he deals with a calf strain. And if you haven't listened to yet this week, Kevin O'Connor labeled Evan Mobley as one of the most overrated players in the NBA. So he had a hot take on Evan Mobley, but they're going to be without him. And Karl-Anthony Towns is not going to have to deal with Mobley, who he leads the team in at-rim field goal field goals per game, and he's not going to have to deal with that with a lot of the spacing that the you know replacements for Evan Mobley are going to have. But I think when you have Karl-Anthony Towns, it just needs to be guaranteed average defense. I don't think he needs to be an all-world defender. I don't think he needs to be top 25 in the NBA in defense. But in the same way that Chris Bosh for the Miami Heat, when you had a bunch of really good big wings defenders in Shane Battier, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, you can make up for, like, Chris Bosh didn't have to be Dikembe Mutombo out there in order for them to win championships. In the same way, Karl-Anthony Towns, he's got OG Anunoby, who's a big guy on the wing, who can play bigger than most wings can, 3-and-D wings can. And Mikal Bridges, they're going to be able to size up a lot on their wings, and Josh Hart. And Mitchell Robinson has always been a bulldozer on the boards and being able to defend the rim a lot better than Karl-Anthony Towns can. So if he's just guaranteed average, Brian Windhorst always said, like, on the road when he's looking for hotels, Tom, just go for guaranteed average. You don't have to go for a fancy hotel. Just it's nice to know what you're going to get, right? It's nice to know that there's no surprises when you book your hotel. So in the same way, if Karl-Anthony Towns can be just guaranteed average every night and not do these ticky-tack mind-numbing fouls that he likes to do in the postseason and foul out in the third quarter, I think that's what the Knicks need. Mike Brown is going to ask for Karl-Anthony Towns. And so far this season, he's been getting that from Kat. So love to see what the Knicks are doing and love to see them win the cup. And I wish they raised the banner, but I'm going to raise an eggnog to Karl-Anthony Towns for his ability to play defense so far this season.
We're going to go from guaranteed average to something that I think has a chance to be a hell of a lot better than that. Our second little number this week is 9. That's how many players have averaged 18 points and 7 assists per game by their age 21 season, according to StatHead.com. Those players: Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, Allen Iverson, Stephon Marbury, LeBron James, Trae Young, Luka Doncic, Ja Morant, and LaMelo Ball. That's kind of a who's who of, like, young playmakers over the last several decades entering the NBA. I bring that up because Stephon Castle, as of this recording, is averaging 18.3 points and 7.2 assists per game for the San Antonio Spurs, who, as you might remember, knocked off the Oklahoma City Thunder in the NBA Cup knockout round on the way to the final, and they're going to get the Thunder again on Christmas Day. Castle, by the way, it's not just the points, it's not just the assists. He's also like a 6'6 awesome defender, you know, who can, he's great on the ball, off the ball, and deals with, like, he's going to guard SGA, like, your toughest matchup every given night. And he's 21 years old. Like, a lot of things we talked about with Cooper Flagg, they really apply here too. Kid won Rookie of the Year and has come back even better, like, basically at everything except his three-point shot. And even that is kind of like, I think he's like around 34-35% since he came back from his hip injury. He seems to be getting better by the day at, like, everything. There's already a highlight reel of him throwing lobs to Luke Kornet. They've got, like, incredible chemistry on the pick and roll lob. Which I love, because then it gives Luke Kornet opportunities to celebrate with, like, the on your head or the Vince Carter. So that's really a wonderful thing. I don't blame anybody if the first thing they think about, and the second and third thing they think about when they think about the Spurs, is Victor Wembanyama. But, like, is it possible that Castle's already on the path to stardom here? Like, he's already gotten so much better this fast, and they've already gotten so much better this fast. All that talk about, like, we got to, you know, package together things for Giannis, or it feels like that's a long time ago now, because we're already in a place where it feels like these guards and Castle in front of mind for me could be on that path already.
Dude, it doesn't take a lot to look at Stephon Castle and the way he plays at such a young age and think, could he be the next SGA? I mean, think about it. Like, when you get a guy who's this big and has this distribution and can get to the cup, D-cells and the footwork and the ability to get to his shots, And he's getting fouls at a rate that is at a prime NBA plus superstar. He's getting a ton of free throws in the same way that guys just can't guard Shai Gilgeous-Alexander legally every time out on the floor. And Stephon Castle has a lot of that kind of like grown man game to him where he's going to get you out of position and exploit that. And he's still 21 years old and able to do this at this age. And you look over on like you got Wemby, and it's not hard to see like Chet and SGA going at Stephon Castle and Victor Wembanyama. It's going to be an amazing matchup for years to come. And I'm so excited that the schedule makers were able to, you know, make this the game for the Christmas Day. Cause I think this is going to be the new Western Conference rivalry. And Stephon Castle is on the same tier as Victor Wembanyama in the sense of these are franchise cornerstones that I think would be top 10, top 15 franchise cornerstones at their age. I mean, there's not going to be a long list of guys you'd rather have than Stephon Castle, who, as you pointed out, as good of a playmaker at his age as we've seen in a long time. So he's great. I highlighted earlier at TomTheFinder.com about how if we're looking for Victor Wembanyama's co-pilot, is it De'Aaron Fox? Is he worthy of being the co-pilot for Victor Wembanyama going forward? I'm like, they already got one in Stephon Castle. This is an embarrassment of riches for the San Antonio Spurs, where they got two guys who are elite playmakers, and he hasn't had the same assist totals with De'Aaron Fox because they're sharing the ball. But like, when you got that dude and Dylan Harper and De'Aaron Fox, the Spurs are here, man. And the San Antonio Spurs, this is going to be the rivalry going forward. And Stephon Castle making that second year leap is a big reason why they took down OKC in the Cup semis. And I can't wait. I cannot wait for this Christmas Day matchup.
Yeah. The only thing that's trailing right now for him is just, it's the jumper. It's if you can get, you know, if you can iron out to where defenses can't just go under on your ball screens and where you are a real threat when you have Harper or Fox or somebody else initiating and you can be that sort of off-ball threat, they got to give you a hard closeout, then you're right at the rim because of the way he can explode off the ball. It makes what's already a really good San Antonio offense even tougher to guard. It's just been so fun watching him in leaps and bounds this season. Fun in a different way, and I'm interested to hear what you think about this. Our third little number is 55.4%. That's the share of LeBron James's baskets that have been assisted this season. 55.4%. It's the first time in his career that more than half of his buckets have been set up by somebody else, not him being the one to self-create. And that's interesting to me because we talked about this all the way back at like media day. LeBron is out there saying, I've been working on my catch and shoot threes all summer. I know I'm coming into a team where, you know, Luka can handle the ball and AR can handle the ball and Marcus Smart can handle the ball. How do I make an impact while I'm being off ball more? And we were kind of like, yeah, right. Like I'll believe LeBron James is going to be off the ball more when he gets off the ball more. And he's doing it. He's off the ball more. We've talked about the stat before, on ball percentage. NBA RAPM tracks this. It's like literally just what it sounds like. What percentage of the time that you're in the game do you have the ball in your hands? And LeBron had always been like 30s, 40% at his highest, 19.6% this season so far. He is snug in between Grayson Allen and Ausar Thompson in on-ball percentage. LeBron James is in that sort of situation. And so, like, he's been in this situation where he is actually allowing, you know, other people to control. And obviously, you know, Luka Doncic being an MVP caliber creator, Austin Reeves having the phenomenal, like, all-star caliber start to his season, LeBron missing the first 14 games with a sciatic injury and him having kind of come in and get in where he fits in. He has actually made good on his words. Time of possession down, seconds per touchdown, dribbles, fewer than two dribbles per touch for LeBron, which, you know, has never been the case. And he's still averaging. He's getting it. He's averaging 25-7 and he's shooting 54% from the floor since over the last handful of games, since he kind of started to get ramped up. So like, he's doing it. It's having an impact. He's getting to make his production. I'm wondering what you've seen about how he has actually fit in. Like, yes, he's doing what he has said he would do. What do you think about how that fit is working out as they go into a Christmas Day matchup with the Houston Rockets?
They need to get him easy buckets because they're asking a lot for LeBron. LeBron shouldn't be playing 36 minutes a night. He shouldn't be playing 36. Right. They're asking him. I mean, Luka and AR are banged up, and so he's had to play without them recently. And it's just that Clippers game was alarming to me because it's like, LeBron, how many games can LeBron be the only guy out there with no Luka and no AR and survive the whole season? And so, yeah, it makes sense that at this point in his career, with the back stuff that he's been dealing with, the sciatica, that he is not as mobile as he used to be and doesn't have the same sort of ability to get into that sixth gear like he used to. And so I think he's trying to pace himself because they're going to try to win a championship this season or at least go make a deep playoff run. And I think he's just too old for this, man. I think he's too old for playing that many minutes and having to create a lot of shots for himself. So am I surprised that he's getting over half of his buckets assisted this season? I'm not. And I hope that we're going to see a full complement of players on Christmas Day with Luka and Austin Reeves in this matchup, because I do think that LeBron, I just worry that he's not going to be able to do this all season long if he's asked to, you know, shoulder a lot of that burden and play. I think he needs to be under 30 minutes a night, and maybe the roster isn't there. Like, they don't have enough guys on the Lakers roster to be able to support LeBron playing 29, 30 minutes. And honestly, like you pointed out, maybe he doesn't want that. Maybe LeBron wants to be out there for 36, 37, because he doesn't know any other way. You know, it's been 20 years of him, 20 plus years. He played at 18 years old on Christmas Day. It's been 20 plus years of playing about 40 minutes a night. So maybe he just at this point doesn't really know what it's like to pull back a little bit and play like 30, 32 minutes. But I just think he needs to take a back seat this season. I just don't know how, with the sciatica stuff, that he's going to be able to go 82 games and then some.
Yeah, I think JJ Redick would probably agree with you, maybe not on the minute total, but the idea that we don't want LeBron to be the only guy shouldering the playmaking load, right? And when you've had both Luka and Austin Reeves available, JJ Redick has basically never put LeBron out there without at least one of them at this point. And I think the way it, and then now you've had Luka dealing with his injury and the leg contusion, and then Austin Reeves with a calf injury. There have been a couple of times where it's been LeBron as sort of the main show the last like week or so. But all told, I believe PBP stats here. Yeah. 47 of LeBron's 375 minutes this season have come without either Luka or Reeves on the court, where he's just running solo. So like JJ Redick is telling you by the usage, like, we really would prefer to not have him need to be the number one guy out there. All things considered, we'd rather have one or both of those other guys out there to be the main ball handlers, the main pick and roll facilitators, and then have LeBron kind of get in where he fits in there. That also brings up the defensive problems, which we've talked about before, and you wrote about well at TomTheFinder.com, so people should go check that out as far as the Lakers' defense and a potential solution for it. But that's going to bring us to our fourth and final little number this week, 1.29. That's how many points per shot attempt Jamal Murray is averaging this season, according to our friends at Clean Glass. That is really good. That's a very efficient shot making. Jamal Murray is that number, 1.29. That is the 12th highest mark of any player using more than 20% of his team's offensive possessions. That's right between Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry. I only know this because we, before the show, were looking it up. Apparently, people call Jamal Murray Maple Curry. I don't know that I've ever heard that, but it's on Basketball Reference, so it must be true. He is flirting with, he's a little bit south of it on the field goals and the free throws, but he is flirting with 50-45-90 this season. Not 50-40-90, 50-45-90 this season, which the only players who've done that, I think minimum 1,000 minutes played, Steph, Steve Kerr, Steve Nash. Pretty good company to be in if you are a shooting point guard, man.
Maple Curry.
I mean, I guess you can't say Maple Nash because they share the Canadian lineage, but Maple Kerr. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're Maple Curry, then Maple Curry feels like a step down. Anyway, the point being, yes, we all know that as Nikola Jokic goes, so go the Nuggets, right? And like him by himself, you know, playing with you and me would have a chance at like a top five offense and 48 wins. But it is my contention that the Nuggets only really become the Nuggets when Jamal Murray is healthy, engaged, locked in, and dealing. And he has been absolutely doing that this season. A career-long kind of slow starter comes into camp, yep. maybe needs a little bit of time to find his shot, get into shape, and then he really picks up midstream. He has been awesome from the jump this season, and it's one big reason why the Nuggets are number one in offensive efficiency with a bullet heading into their Christmas Day matchup with the Timberwolves.
Just giving you an idea of his shooting percentages this point in the season last year, 18 points per game, 34.9% from three, and 42.9% from the floor. Yeah, Dan, remember last year we did this where we had a slow starter, Jamal Murray. We were kind of worried, or at least I was, about his ability to play into the season dealing with injuries and just weren't really excited about Jamal Murray this time last year because he was averaging 18 points a game, the 43% from the floor, 34.9% from three. And he's playing like not, you know, Maple Curry. I would say he's playing like playoff Murray, playoff Jamal Murray. Like yeah. he's doing that right now, which is what he needed to do in order to punch his first all-star ticket of his career, which would also give Nikola Jokic, it's a real stat, the first time Jokic has ever had an all-star teammate in his NBA career. I think Jamal Murray is an all-star this year. He's playing like it for sure. And I'm happy to see that he's prioritized his health or whatever he needed to do to play like this and work on his game, because this is the guy that we see in the playoffs year in, year out. And now he's doing it in the regular season, and it might just win them an NBA championship this year, because it's going to need something like this to overcome the Minnesota Timberwolves and OKC in the Western Conference. I love watching Jamal Murray just taking a step up this year and playing like playoff Murray in the regular season. It's going to be great. Can't wait for it on Christmas Day.
Yeah, if you need something to hold on to for the late night game, if you've been watching games all day and you're like, man, what's going to keep me awake going, like, Jamal Murray might just go out there and throw up a 40 ball. Like he gets hot yep. In a hurry. He gets angry and then turns that into buckets. He's an awfully fun player. Like if Jokic is sort of like, you know, ice and in play and sort of like consistency and like smooth and cool, Jamal Murray is the fire, man. And he is a ton of fun to watch. So him and Ant, that can be pretty combustible oh. matchup on in the late show on Christmas Eve, or on Christmas night rather.
Yeah, I can't wait. I feel like Cooper Flagg needs like a arch nemesis, because I feel like he's going against the Warriors, and that's going to be a fun matchup with Steph and Cooper Flagg. But I feel like these next two games, or at least when we're seeing LeBron going at KD, we got Ant versus Jamal Murray. I feel like we've got really, really awesome one-on-one matchups with Chet and Wemby, Stephon and SGA. It's a great slate. I keep saying this, but I'm really excited for Christmas Day, more so than usual. Hopefully the health works out and we're going to be able to see all these guys play that are slated to play. So fingers crossed. We're gonna try to fix some other things in the league that we just found word on Tuesday morning, some ideas about how to kind of improve draft positioning and make sure that the NBA draft is sound and not dealing with a lot of late season jockeying for position and ping pong balls. We're going to talk about that right after the break. All right, hot take here, Dan. I just saw the news that the NBA is considering and opening up talks to have different, you know, draft rules or little changes to the system in order to incentivize teams to not tank at the end of the season. As you see here, the NBA has started gathering input from owners and GMs and new ways to combat tanking in the aftermath of the gambling scandal that surfaced at the start of the season, per Shams Charania. At a Board of Governors meeting on Friday, the league presented several ideas around this topic, including three provisions, one of which is no top four picks in consecutive years, locking lottery positions after March 1st, and pick protections for top four or lottery protected, no top eight protected, no top 10 protected, not top one protected, because they want to combat against that weird stuff that the Dallas Mavericks did a few years ago to get Derek Lively. Now, here's my take on this. Scrap all that and scrap the NBA draft. Kill the draft. All of this stuff is like moving the decks around, the moving the chairs around the Titanic, where it's like, we're trying to fix this thing and it's going to create unintended consequences. And I just feel like the way more fun way to do this and the way more honest way to do this is to kill the draft and introduce the rookie signing day. That's right. Free agency for all rookies. Dan, the draft incentivizes losing. It incentivizes corruption in the way of like, hey, we're going to have this little gap of, are we trying to win or are we trying to lose? And if we're trying to lose to improve our draft positioning, then there's going to be a pocket of time where or people are going to know that we're not going to play our starters and we're going to play our B team. We can't have that. We can't have the assumption or the perception that teams aren't trying to win clutch games or aren't trying to win every single game. So that gap of the integrity of the game and the and trying to fix a loophole, I feel like it's opening the door for corruption. In the gambling era, we don't want that. We don't want to incentivize losing. We don't want to incentivize any sort of impropriety or corruption. And we don't want to incentivize, and this is a big one, Dan, we don't want to incentivize incompetency. In what profession are we going to say, hey, yeah, all the best doctors in the world, you're going to go to the worst well-run companies, worst companies in the country. It doesn't work like that. If we want to have a system in which we're going to have an efficient system where every team every night is trying to win as many games as possible, we can't have a system in place that rewards teams for being bad, rewards teams for having incompetent front offices, guys who aren't really trying to win every single game. It is such a fraught system in the second half of the year. And I worry, Dan, that having like this Band-Aid on this massive wound of like, hey, we're going to move up, that we're going to lock in the draft positioning on March 1st. We're just going to get a bunch of tanking in February and in January. We're just going to move up when that tanking happens instead of having it in April and March. And so, Dan, I feel like we do this in college basketball where AJ, is he going to Kentucky? Is he going to Kansas? Is he going to Duke? Are they just loading up on one team? No. You want to know why? Because money matters. System matters. The opportunity matters. AJ DeBonsa might have chased more money or whatever it is at BYU, but he's also wanting to get the ball all the time and not have to play second fiddle or third fiddle to other stars. And so people are like, oh, if we kill the draft, then all of these teams are going to just load up with the best players. And I'm like, nah, man, we see it in college basketball. These guys want their own team. They want the money. They want to take care of their families. And so here's how you do it. Rookie scale contracts out. But what we're going to do is rookie exceptions, basically cap exceptions for the losingest team. So like the bottom feeders in the league, they can sign rookie and incentivize rookies to come to their team with more money. So it's not just about we are the worst team, therefore we are guaranteed to get Victor Wembanyama or guaranteed to get AJ DeBonsa or guaranteed to get Cooper Flagg. You have to present these rookies, incoming rookies, with a plan. You have to present them with a future, a process, some sort of pitch to have them come to your team. And instead of them being able to get guaranteed top chef talent, no matter how horrible you are running this organization, you have to make a pitch just like they do in free agency, just like college programs do or baseball teams do in their draft. You have more money to send and set attract this top shelf talent, but it's not guaranteed that you can get them. And so I feel like this is a better system, more optimal system, and it gets a lot of this tanking, losing on purpose, gaps in information at the second half of the season. Yeah, there are some things that we need to tie up in this situation. I'm sure there's a bunch of people who are watching this like, what about this? What about that? But the biggest problem we have is incentivizing losing. We're incentivizing incompetency, and we're incentivizing inside information with the setup right now. And I applaud the NBA trying to tie these loose ends, but I also feel like the draft needs to be replaced. Kill the draft, bring in the free agency for incoming rookies, and give these teams that are losing, yes, are losing, more tools to recruit these players, but not necessarily guaranteed, because I think that is a big problem, is that no matter how bad you are, you're going to have more shot at those ping pong balls than the teams that are well-run. And I think we need to incentivize teams to be well-run, trying to win every game, and not trying to, you know, share inside information with the gambling community. So, Dan, I would draft you number one overall in my rookie signing day. I would make sure that I would use all of my cap to sign you to my NBA team. So I will lead with that. Dan, how do you feel about that idea now that I've buttered you up and said I'm going to give you 20% of the cap as a rookie?
20% of the cap. Shoot, I'll take it. I think that you're right to note that the like cardinal sin here, the original sin of all this is a reverse order system, record order system is still going to incentivize teams to lose, right? Like you can flatten the odds out. You can try to sort of jerry-rig it however you'd like. But if the system is in any way structured so that the worse you are, the better chance you have at that elite talent or that elite prospect, then teams will not stop looking for that, you know, slight sliver of a percentage point edge to improve their positioning to get that talent. Like what makes these things go, the turnarounds happen because you are able to develop to land that high value, high ceiling young talent and then develop around them. So, you know, we saw it in Oklahoma City. We saw it in San Antonio. We've seen it time and again. Like you get those guys and that's what can change everything. So if you're not going to adopt a dramatically reoriented system for running the draft, like, you know, like Mike Zarin's wheel concept from a million years ago, where it was like, we completely divorce where you are in the standings from your pick. Like it's just every 30 years it rotates. And like this year you're a 16 pick, no matter what, you know, this year, yeah, you're the number one pick, no matter what. It has nothing to do with whether you are good or bad. That would at least theoretically incentivize you to be good no matter what, because it's not going to have a bearing on where you pick. Or a concept like tombstone wins. I know people have talked about over the years where the idea is like the day, you know, based on something, you know, some date, like the day you are eliminated from playoff contention, the more wins you stack up after that point improves your draft odds, improves your lottery stock. So like rather than having March or February or whatever be the dead zone for you, where like everything past that point just doesn't matter, the better you do after that point gives you a better chance of raising up there. So those are the kinds of, and those are like pretty radical ideas that the league has considered things like that and has to put this point not moved on any of them, preferring, as you sort of put it, like band-aids on these solutions, are like plugging a finger into a dam every time a new leak springs up. And I think to me, like the more complicated and Byzantine and arcane all these things get in an era where we are operating with multiple aprons that have a wide variety of punishments and penalties that go along with it, that I think your average fan gets extremely confused by and frustrated by. And when I say average fan, I also mean average writer covering this stuff, to be honest. Like I have to look up what the penalties are and the punishments are and like memorize, like it's not exactly flowing off the tongue.
Right. And it changes every year. It changes every year. Right. So
which is the other thing, like you flattened out the lottery odds how many years ago? You've seen it. There has been a significant change in the way that the top, like you have teams that finish 10th or 11th in the odds leaping up to the top of the draft. Like there have been sea changes in the way all this operates and we're seeing them year over year. And now like a handful of years into it, you're saying now we're going to change it again. And so to me, like, I hear your point. I think I don't know if this is like too cynical, but like the league loves the draft, right? Fans like the draft. The league loves the idea of it is, it is a bright made for TV broadcast that is now split up over two nights, asked for by whom, I'm not entirely sure, but now that's what it is.
But we could do draft night in the sense of like the idea of having a player choose his team on national TV. Like that element of like, we don't know who's the team's going to draft it. We just flip it. And it's like National Signing Day in college sports where it's like, we get to see who Cooper Flagg decides he wants to go play for in a way that creates so much drama. You saw LeBron's decision. What if every incoming rookie, or at least the top 10, whatever you do, has a decision to make? And it would be such great theater and teams would be disappointed. And you would see, like, instead of just like the draft lottery, which is super awkward television and they have to draw it out until the last minute, it's not the best TV product. But at the end of the day, if you had all the teams basically vying for these top shelf talent on live television, that's an awesome TV product. Like no one is sitting here being like, college sports, there's not enough content around college sports. Like, they should do a draft. No, the way that they do it is super exciting and super controversial, and it creates a ton of buzz. And the NBA draft, I feel like, has fallen off in recent years. And I don't think that it's necessarily a great thing that we have so many gaps and slack in the tanking problem. It could be solved if we just move away from this, what I think is an outdated model in the NBA draft. And Amin Alhassan, he brought this up on ESPN a few years ago, is like, getting rid of the NBA draft would solve so many of the league's issues. And moving towards this cap-based rookie exception model, if the Utah Jazz could offer AJ DeMonts a 20% of the cap and the San Antonio Spurs could only offer 10% of the cap, who do you think he's going to sign with? And Cooper Flagg, all these guys would come into the league and have all these different considerations that they would have to consider for their future. And it would be a much more efficient system and much more on the level system that would, I think, get rid of a lot of the tanking in the NBA. And that, my friends, is a huge problem in the NBA. It's tanking because with the gambling partnerships and all that, you need to close all of these loops. And I just think these little things that we're proposing, it's putting lipstick on a pig. If we're going to keep using these metaphors and Band-Aids and gum on the leak in the Hoover Dam, I think that the NBA should think about this more holistically than these little minor tweaks. I don't think they're going to do very much. But Dan, I'm excited for Christmas Day. I'm excited for the next week's episode of The Big Number. We've got lots of good content for you at Yahoo NBA. Go check it out on the Yahoo NBA YouTube page with Kevin O'Connor, the Dunker Spot, this show here. It's going to be a great time. Go subscribe now to get all of your NBA YouTube shows from the Yahoo Sports Squad. And please hit that subscribe button and go tell your friends. And you know what, in the comment section, you know what, give Dan a shout out, because Dan, he's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes on a lot of the columns he's writing for all your content out there. I just want to say Merry Christmas, enjoy your Christmas, enjoy the holidays with your family. We love having you on the show, and thanks so much to the producers behind the scenes, Sarah, Emmy, and Ryan. During the holiday, thanks for working overtime to make these shows a reality during the holidays. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Dan, go fill up that coffee mug with something else, okay?
It's going to stay coffee. Happy Cheers. Holidays, everybody. Be safe out there. And we'll see you for the last one before the new year. We got one more. And then in 2026, we're going to have to come up with a whole new set of resolutions to make the show better. So let's work on that while we're having our eggnog.